All right, welcome to Bicycle Talk. This is 91.7 FM WHUS. I am Pedlin Fran, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk on August 22nd, 2018. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, you can email me today at radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can write anytime to Pedlin Ron at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Okay, here is my rant of the week. And, you know, the rant, I like, you want to rant because you don't want to accuse anybody of anything. You kind of want to be nice. Yes, Ron is away again this week. He's doing sun things. So I'm going to be here to sit in for Bicycle Talk again. It's kind of like when you're listening to NPR and you have Lucy Nalpathanchel sitting in for John Dankosky. So just think of me as Lucy Nalpathanchel. Oh, okay, don't. I'm Fran. I'm Pedlin Fran. Or the Radio Naturopath, or whatever you want to call me. Anyway, so shout out to our friends at NPR. So anyway, here is my rant of the week, and the rant it's just a gentle chiding, and the rant is people who don't stretch. So cyclists who don't stretch, I should say. So I'm not saying that you know, you should always stretch all the time, but maybe you should. It's really a good idea to finish your ride with a stretch. Stretching is really good for you. Stretching is good because it helps to preserve the activity that you just did. It helps to keep your muscles limber. It's very good for cyclists. And what I usually see is that people will go home and you know, and there's no end of good stretches for cyclists, but stretching is really, really important. So if you look at Average Joe has a nice summary of these things. When you, because what muscles do, they have fibers that stretch and they contract. And they work really hard at contracting, and they have to rebuild themselves. You get muscle soreness after you're riding because those muscles are, you're putting a lot of strain on those muscles. You're using them, and you're going through the proteins, and you're breaking down some of the actin and myosin, and the nodules of the proteins, they kind of clump together, and you get inflammation. When you get the inflammation, it presses on nerves and it tends to be sore. So when you stretch, you get rid of the waste products that are built up in the use of those muscles. You're getting that irregular accumulation of protein when you're overusing that muscle, when you're just using the muscle. When you stretch, you're regrouping those thick and thin filaments and you're putting them back in order. Your muscles, when you're using them, they kind of clump up, and when you stretch them out, you're literally, well, stretching them out, you're putting them back in order. So just think of it this way. You just took a shower, right? And you take your towel, and towel's wet, and you throw it on the ground, and it's all bunched up. So now it's bunched up. It's not going to dry very well, and it's probably going to get moldy too. But if you pick up that towel and you straighten it out and you hang it up, now it's nice and straight. Well, guess what? You got to do that to your muscles too. And when you do that, your muscles, when you don't straighten out that towel, the towel is going to get moldy because the air, the water that's in it is going to be less exposed to the air. It's not going to be able to dry out, and it's going to give mold more of a chance to grow. Well, guess what? If you don't straighten out your muscles, all those proteins that got clumped up and bunched up and inflamed in your muscles, you're not going to be able to release the breakdown products and the metabolites as easily as when you stretch it out. So it's a decent analogy. I don't know if it's the best, but when you have antagonist muscles, you have muscle, when you contract one muscle, another muscle stretches. So when you are stretching, what you want to do is what the muscles that you used a lot, You want to stretch them out. So you're going to do the opposite of whatever you did to the muscle. So when you're riding a bicycle, when you push down on the pedal, you are using your quads to push down. And so you're strengthening your quads when you do that. And when you pull back up, you're using your hamstrings. When you bend your leg, you're using your hamstrings. So your quads and your hamstrings get a lot of work on your bicycle. So in order to, when you use your quad, the use of the quad is when your leg is straight. So the stretch for the quad is to bend it, and that, so you bend your knee. And so one way, very simple way to do that is to hold on to something and grab onto your foot and just bend your knee. And then hamstrings, the opposite. Hamstrings' job is to bend your knee. So when you're going to stretch it, you're going to straighten your leg out. So it's really good to stretch, you can stretch before you work out, but it's also a good idea to stretch. Definitely a good idea to stretch up after. You can stretch some. If you're tight before you go on your ride, you can do a bit of stretching. It's also a good idea. One of the things that I see on bike rides is that people will go out too fast, that they, you know, they'll go out of the parking lot and they get race jitters. If you're on an amateur group ride, people tend to go out too fast, and that's really not a good thing. If you go to spin class, you would never start doing your intervals in the first 5 minutes. In spin class, you always have at least a 5 minute warm up. When you're actually training and doing intervals, you would never settle for a 5 minute warm up. You would always do, more like at least 15 minutes of warm up, depending on what your activity is going to be. So if I'm going to go out and do a time trial, if I'm just out training, I'm going to do a time trial. I'm going to be warming up for at least 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes more, depending where your time trial, like if you set your time trial up so that you're going to do your workout, 20 minutes from your house, that's a great thing because you just ride to the location, you do your workout, and then you ride home and you get a good warm down at the end. But you can do actual stretching before and after. And it's a good idea to stretch as soon as you can after you're done your ride. I mean, that's what I try to do. I mean, when you're in spin class, you're going to stretch, you're going to have your cool down, and then you're going to get off the bike, and then you're going to do your stretches. The instructor is going to lead you through your stretches. So one of the things that we see too is that people stand around in the parking lot chatting after they're done their group ride. While you're standing around chatting, you could be stretching. Another thing to do that's not a bad idea is if your water bottle isn't finished, it's a good idea to finish off that water bottle. It's also not a bad idea to keep fluid in your car if you can manage it, to keep a cooler in your car with some extra fluid to drink. And if you have to drive home, maybe you want to have that protein shake in the car and, you know, have the, if there's some kind of protein that you like to drink, you can also eat protein. That's another thing. But having that protein within that first half hour after your bike ride is going to be a good way to get those amino acids in to help to build up your muscles. But when you're standing around in the parking lot, it's really not a bad idea to be stretching. And if you want to do a minimal bit of stretching, at least you can do your quads. And like I said, you can grab onto your ankle and pull your ankle up so that you're getting a good quad stretch. And then you can straighten your leg out with a little bit of a bend in your knee and put your heel on the ground and lean forward, and you're going to get a little bit of a hamstring stretch. If you do that same stretch, but you bend your knee a little bit more, you'll hit your calf muscles, your soleus and your gastrocnemius. Hip flexors. That's where that nice standing pigeon comes in, and I'll see if I can explain. You probably know what it is, but when I explain it to you, you'll understand. So you take your ankle, the outside of your ankle, you hold onto your car or a fence or your bike. You can do this. Hold onto your bike as well, you take. You're standing on one leg with the knee bent, and you take the other leg and you bend the knee outward like you were going to carve a corner. And you take the outside of your ankle and you put it just above the knee of the opposite leg. And then you squat a little bit. And that's a standing pigeon. And that's going to help to get your hip flexors. Another good hip flexor stretch is hold onto your car or your friend or your bicycle. And you basically do a runner's lunge. And what you want to do, if you're going to do a runner's lunge, you want to make sure that your the leg that's in the back is at least at a 45 degree angle and you sit into it. And then you'll feel a nice hip flexor stretch there. Just doing, and also just very simple, reaching for the sky as high as you can. That's going to stretch out your spine and open up the spaces between your vertebrae. And then if you can do a forward fold where you lean forward and reach for your toes, you don't have to touch the ground. You don't have to touch your toes. But that'll take some pressure off your back, because remember, you've been sitting in the same position for how many hours, depending on how long your ride was, 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours, whatever you were doing. So stretching out the places that were cramped up is a really good idea. It's going to provide, it's like the gentleman said, you're resetting and you're realigning the muscles so that they can do their healing and so that they can provide circulation and nutrition to those muscles more readily. If the muscles are bunched up and clumped up, they're going to stay that way, and then it can get worse and worse, and that's where you get your trigger points, and that's when you get into your big massage therapy bill. So that's an issue. The other thing that I can't recommend highly enough is the foam roller. Love that foam roller. If you have time, now if you want to do foam rolling in the parking lot after your ride, you could do that. If not, you could wait till you get home. But foam rolling is invaluable, really terrific. There's good YouTubes where you can go and look and see how to do foam rolling. But I recommend at least foam rolling, again, your quads and your hamstrings. And I like to do my IT band on the sides. I actually do my adductors as well, because adductor. How many of you have gotten adductor cramps when you've been on a long bike ride and you got adductor cramps? Right here. Oh, yeah. Rolling out your adductors is a really good idea. I do my buttocks, because your glute muscles, if you're in proper position, you're going to be using your glute muscles, especially to climb those hills. So you want to roll out your glutes as well. Then of course I roll out my back, and when I roll out my back, I roll out my whole spine. I will focus some energy. So when you use the foam roller, I'll roll up and down with the foam roller, perpendicular to my body, and I'll roll up and down that way. And I will also take the foam roller and roll parallel to my spine, and I'll actually lie on the foam roller, and I'll just lie there for a few minutes, a minute or two, just to realign my spine that way. And then with the foam roller aligned on the back of my spine, I will roll it from side to side, and then I'll get my shoulder blades, because your shoulder blades, definitely when you're in that position, when you're forward like that, it's really important to roll out those shoulder blades. Also, don't forget, when you're standing stretch, you want to stretch out your arms too, because your arms have been in that one position. So you don't want to forget to do some biceps and triceps stretches. Also, do the kind of yoga mudra stretch. That's where you clasp your hands behind your back. And I like to both clasp my hands behind my back and straighten out my arms and pull downward, and also pull upward as high as I can, because that's going to get your pectoral muscles. When you're home, you can use the foam roller on your chest as well. Those pecs get really sore because the pecs get cramped up. So if you're a person who spends a lot of time on the computer as well as on the bicycle, you're going to have tight pecs. So you want to get those pecs as well. And one way to do that is to roll on it with a foam roller. You can also get a yoga ball, which is a hard ball that you can buy that's for trigger point work. Lacrosse balls work really well as well. Lacrosse balls are very hard, and you can get those sometimes at sporting goods stores, and they're really great for lying on or pressing on for trigger points, whether you do it on the floor or against the wall. So those are things you can have. I also like the AccuBall. The AccuBall is something you can get that has little plastic spikes on it, and so it's called an AccuBall because it supposedly hits acupuncture points, and they come in different sizes, and you can use the little ones for trigger point work or to roll out your feet. You can use bigger ones that have water inside them that you can heat up in the microwave, and they're warm, and then you can roll on them with your spine. So that can be really helpful. So that was my rant of the day. People who don't stretch, that you should, but to be positive about it, you should stretch. Stretching is good for you. It will make you a better cyclist, because you will recover better if you stretch. And everyone wants that, right? If you can take a little bit of extra time to stretch, it might even be worth cutting a little bit of time off your ride to go home and stretch. You have to decide, do you really need the extra miles, or would it be better for you to spend some time stretching? That's a really good question. Sometimes if I'm doing shorter rides, I have to make a decision. Is it better for me to do my core workout, or is it better for me to get the extra miles? And sometimes I decide, you know what, I'm going to go home and do my core. By the way, core for cyclists, really good. It's a really important thing to do, because if you can hold your core well, you're going to be able to position yourself in the saddle better. Really important to do. And I have a very basic core workout that I do, and I try to do it about 4 times a week. If you can do core every day, that's great. If somebody tells you do this every day, you're probably not going to do it. So I don't necessarily recommend that, but on a not so great week, I might do it twice in the week. I try to do it 4 days a week, and I try to, you know, challenge myself to get my core workout in 4 days a week. If I get it more, that's great. If I don't, it's okay. But the basic core workout, so big shout out to Celine Yeager, who taught me a couple of these moves. One of the moves I really like, so I happen to have an exercise ball at home, a nice big exercise ball, and those can be invaluable for all kinds of neat exercises. But one exercise I like to do, I like to get on the exercise ball, and I like to do oval crunches. So I get in crunch position on the ball with the exercise ball in the middle of my back, and instead of moving my torso up and down, I move it in an oval. And I worked up to where I do 15 of those in each direction. So I do that. The next thing I do is hip bridges. I get on the ground and I bend my knees and put my heels close to my rear end, and I lift my bum up into a bridge position, and I hold that for 2 seconds, and then I drop slowly to a count of 3, 1, 2, 3, and I do a bunch of those. I've worked up to where I do 20 of them. You can do less. The next thing I do is I get I'm prone on the ball. I put my hands on the ground and I lift up both legs, squeezing my glutes. So it's a double leg raise, and so it's a glute exercise. It actually squeezes your glutes, which is part of your core as well. So, and then I get on the ground, I do bird dogs. So bird dogs is where you think you don't know what those are, but you do. Okay. So you get on in table pose in yoga, which is your hands and your feet are on the ground, or your hands and your knees are on the ground. So you're in table pose. You reach one arm out and the opposite leg back straight. And then you pull your elbow in to meet your knee in the opposite directions. And I do a bunch of those on each side. I've worked up to 20. You can do less. It's fine. I like to do dead bug, get on my back. And dead, it's very funny name for a core exercise, the dead bug. So you get on your back and you put all four legs in the, all four legs. You put both legs and both arms in the air, and now you're a dead bug, right? Okay, so here's how you do dead bug. Dead bug is focusing on your lower abdomen. And so what you do with the dead bug is you lie on the ground. Your head can be on the ground as well. And the leg and arm on one side goes down. So the arm on one side goes down and the other one comes back. And then you keep switching. So leg and arm on one side goes down, and the other leg and arm on the opposite side go in the other direction, and you switch and you go back and forth, and you do 20 of those, and that's your dead bug. And then I do planks. And, you know, I know some people do the plank challenge and they get into the winter and they're like, I'm going to do 5 minutes of plank. And I don't do that, because if I had to do the 5 minute plank challenge, I wouldn't want to do it. So I have challenged myself to, in my core workout, I do 1 minute of front plank. And when you do the plank, if you, my yoga teacher, Jude, says that it's more challenging to do the plank pose on your elbows, because you recruit more of your core when you do the plank pose on your hands, when you do a high, what we call high plank in yoga. The high plank recruits more of your arm muscles, so you don't get your core as much. So she says do it on, you want to do the elbow plank. If you're going to do one or the other, do the elbow plank. I mean, it's good to do the high plank and to do push-ups for other reasons. But, you know, if you're going to do planks, do your elbow planks. That's the one you want to hold. So I hold that for a minute. And then I do side planks on each side, 30 seconds each. I could do longer, but I don't. Why? Because that way I'll do it. If I challenge myself to do more than a minute, I find that I don't do it. I don't want to do it. And I find that even though I do 1 minute planks all the time, I find that, but towards the end of the minute, my core is shaking. So I'm still getting benefit from it, which means that I'm challenging my core all the rest of the time. You know, I'm not doing stuff to support my core. I'm probably doing stuff to not support my core a lot of the time. So I do recommend doing core exercises. Core exercise will help you to have less saddle fatigue. It will help you to sit back in the saddle better. You will have less back pain. I know for me that I have less back pain when I do core. There was a while there where my knee was injured. They told me that certain core exercises I shouldn't do because they were taxing my knee. So I'd stopped doing them. Planks was one of them. And I had more back pain. I had more back soreness. And you know, at my age, I'm more likely to get back soreness. So I find my core exercise is invaluable for that. And the bicycle is very challenging. It is an exercise that reduces your flexibility. So it is imperative that we as cyclists stretch and stretch regularly and also do our core exercises. I also can't recommend yoga enough. I love yoga. I know some cyclists are, I'm not flexible enough to do yoga. So it's a good idea to find a beginner class. If you feel embarrassed to go to yoga class, you don't have to go. You can get a private yoga teacher if that's too much for you. There are so many yoga classes online. You can get yoga classes for no charge. If you just go, you can look on YouTube and you can get, there are things that you can find on YouTube just that are yoga classes. If you have cable, you can often find yoga classes embedded in some of your cable attributes. And then there are also services that you can buy, you know, online that where you can get, you know, unlimited yoga classes for so much per month. And then you can take yoga in the privacy of your own home and nobody has to see. The thing is, if you're not good at something and that you need to do, the only way you're going to get good at it is if you practice it. And I promise you that regular stretching will make your cycling better. People who are professional cyclists, they stretch. Of course, they get physical medicine, which is another thing that is a really good idea to be thinking about, getting physical medicine. And, you know, not everybody can afford to do that or not everybody has the time to do that. So if you don't have the time to go get your massage, your acupuncture, your chiropractic, which all things I highly recommend to everyone, but especially to cyclists, I find those things invaluable. If you can't do those things all the time, your foam roller is your very inexpensive home massage therapist. Your sewer, your stretches, and you're drinking your water and doing your protein shakes at the end. These are all very important things to do. That was a very long rant, but I hope it was helpful to you. Okay, so let's go to the positive side and let's talk about the steeplechase. The steeplechase was fab. I had a really nice time at the steeplechase. This year I rode with my friend Martin, who insisted upon doing the Century Ride. Chris Lacey came in from out west and I rode with him as well. So Martin and Chris did the entire Century. I did not because I'm relegated because of my knee. And we picked up a lovely woman named Kathy Coast. We're very delighted to meet. She does triathlons and she came out from the west side of the state and we wound up riding with her. And I made a decision that I was, you know, I'm relegated to about 50, 60 miles right now for my long ride and not to push too hard. So I planted a car at my friend's house who lives near We Like It Ice Cream. And We Like It Ice Cream was a rest stop and that's where the Living Proof church is. They set up the rest stop there. I have some lovely photos from the Living Proof Church. They're just lovely people and they always look forward to seeing us. It's very sweet. So, and we look forward to seeing them as well. So I had planted my car at my friend's house because I was not supposed to do the full 100 miles to preserve my knee, and my knee isn't 100%. And so that was a good thing to do. And I'm very grateful to my friends Alice and Shane for letting me plant my car at their house. I have ice cream for them that I still need to bring them from We Like It. So they continued to ride and we also rode with my friend Lance, and Lance decided to do the actual metric century of the steeplechase. And so we parted company with him at St. Margaret's Church, and we then carried on to We Like It, and I got in my car. And as it happened, I then drove. I had a very pleasant rest of my afternoon because then I drove to Ruckee's and I got ice and I put some drinks on ice, and that was very nice in my cooler. And then I drove to the Woodstock Baptist Church and waited for my friends. And the Woodstock Baptist Church, as usual, had a fabulous spread. It was really wonderful. There were blueberries and olives and cheese. And I love that they have olives and cheese. Three kinds of cookie baked treats, a couple of which were gluten-free. They had fruit. They just had an amazing spread. And they're way more food than they actually need, and I wound up taking a little bit home. That was really lovely. So big shout out to Heidi and the folks at South Woodstock Baptist Church for doing a great job as usual. Met up with my friends there, Martin and Kathy and Chris, and then after they left, I also stopped at the Vanilla Bean and got some iced tea, and that was great. They had mango iced tea. That was pretty awesome. And then I went to the Eastford Baptist Church, where I waited with beautiful Megan and Linda. And Megan was there doing nails, and so I got my nails done while waiting for my friends, and Linda was there. So it was delightful to see them again. And I sat with them, and as I was sitting there, I saw the clouds start to roll in, and eventually Martin and Kathy and Chris showed up, and then we got called because it was late by then, and we got called and said, we don't want you riding back. We were told not to ride back. So I wound up only doing a metric. So just so you know, if you decide to plant a car, I don't know if everybody should do this, but if you ride from the beginning of the steeplechase to We Like It, the We Like It stop, that's a metric. That's not the metric, it's a metric. And you should only do that if you're injured, if there's a good reason. And, you know, I had a good reason to do that. And so we had to get ported back. I had my car at the Eastford Baptist Church, so I didn't need to get carried, but they did. And so they ended their steeplechase with 85 miles, which was just fine. We had a wonderful day. Big shout out to all of the organizations that supported the steeplechase, and they raised great funds for perception programs, for the Willimantic Area Interfaith Ministry, and for the No Freeze Project. It was really great to have Victoria Nemirovsky and Paula Shepherd on last week. Saul Nesselroth wrote again this year, and Lori Riley did a wonderful write-up on Saul Nesselroth, which you can read. And I'll see if I can tell you where that is, where she put that write-up. But she did a write-up on him this year. It was in The Current. And so if you want to, you can read this lovely, oh my goodness, there's even a YouTube, which you're not going to be able, oh my goodness, they made a video of Saul. There it is. My goodness, they videoed him, and here's Lori Riley interviewing him, and there's an article for the, in the Hartford Courant, and an interview with him. How sweet is that? So you can watch this video of Lori interviewing Saul. There's a whole article on Saul, and that was really a lovely thing. So she has a video and a little piece on him, and it's in the Current. It's at thecurrent.com too. So you can check it out. Good old Saul. He's 91 this year. Every year now. For the last few years, for Saul's birthday, we get ice cream. He foots the bill for ice cream for us. Sometimes it's at the Dairy Bar. The last couple of years, it's been at the Red Barn in Stearns Farm in Stores. So that's really nice. So, what a great event. It's a great community event. It's a great event where people come together. And it's funny because, you know, I do a lot of organized rides in a lot of places. And the funny thing about the steeplechase is that I'm riding on roads that I ride on all the time, just all at the same time. So I do recommend coming to Northeastern Connecticut. We have wonderful roads here. It's great to ride here. If you hit up Ron at Bicycle Talk, one@gmail.com. We'd be happy to take you for a ride. There are bike clubs like Thread City Cyclers where you can hook up with them and go on bike rides. We just have wonderful roads here, and we had a wonderful event on Saturday, and the rain didn't come until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So if you were in from whatever ride you did before 4 o'clock, you didn't get rained on. So that was great. And I'm very satisfied with what I did. I have ridden the Steeplechase Century, the full Century route, 12 times. So, you know, I can take care of myself by riding shorter. I think that's okay. So anyway, so that was my positive side for you. I'm going to do a short maintenance minute. Now, I don't know enough about how to do the maintenance to tell you what to do on this, but I'm going to mention it. And that's check and change your cables. Why would I be interested in telling you about checking and changing your cables? Because I am a cable eater. Some people are more cable eaters than others, and I am one of them. If you are a person who shifts a lot, which I am, you're going to go through cables faster. Why? Because you're using the cables more. How do you know if you're, now I know this from Ron, right? So how do you know if your cable is on its way out? Because a ghost starts shifting your bike. Yes. Ooh. So have you ever had been going down the road and you're just riding along merrily and then your bike just shifts all by itself? It goes to one or two gears all by itself. And you're like, what? And you're like, I don't want to be in that gear. And you try to shift back and it goes back. Well, there's a problem there. It could be that your cable is loose. It could just be loose because it's new, or it could be loose because it's old. It could be loose because it's starting to fray. I have been instructed by Ron that as soon as that happens, I am to run home and tell him, because generally it's because my cable is about to go. Your cable going is really no fun, and it happened to poor Kathy Coast on the ride. In fact, when we were at the Eastford Baptist Church, her cable had gone, and she was stuck in, what happens is you get stuck in a couple of gears, and usually what happens is your derailleur drops down to your highest gear, because the cable's not there to hold it in place and move it around. So you're stuck in your highest gear, which makes it very difficult to climb hills. We wondered why Kathy was walking her bike up the hill to get to the church, and we're like, that doesn't make any sense. When I heard that her cable was broken, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. It's not because of her strength. It's because of the cable. And I don't want to hear you say, oh, she should have been able to get up that in the biggest gear. No. So anyway, if you're ghost shifting and you're finding that your bike is ghost shifting, that's what we call that when you know, a spirit comes and shifts your bike even when you didn't want to. It's probably your cable. Probably your cable is loose. So it's time to check the cables and change them. Shout out to Skip, who said to me that the beginning of the season, so if you've been off your bike and you've been riding indoors before your first bike ride of the season, that you should change your cables regardless. So whatever condition they were in, if your bike's been sitting, it's time to change the cables. That's a good thing to do. So because you don't want to break a cable when you're on the road, because you might have a hard time. If you don't know how to change a cable, you're going to be having a hard time getting home, because you're going to be stuck in a really big gear. That's how it usually goes. It drops down to the biggest gear. All right. So what else do I want to talk about to you today? Well, because you've got the blessing of having someone who is a cyclist, but also the radio naturopath, one of the things I want to talk to you about is cross training. So if you're a cyclist, there are sports that you can do that are good cross training for you, so you're not doing the same thing all the time. So here are some recommendations from Bicycling Magazine, and I'll see if I can riff off some of these. So, and they can help you with your riding as well. So a lot of my cyclist friends hike. And that's a great thing, because you don't necessarily have to have particular skills for hiking, although there are some who say you kind of do, because depending on the terrain you're on, you have to know how to get up a rock and you have to know how to scale a wall and that kind of thing. But you don't necessarily have to do that kind of terrain to get a good hike in. You're taking in, because you're outside and you're, you know, you get to see sights in a way that you don't when you're on your bike. Because when you're on your bike, you're speeding by things, and when you're walking, you don't see as much stuff in the long term, but you see a concentrated amount of stuff. And you get to look at things as you're walking in a way that it's hard to do when you're on your bike. So it's a really good thing to do. And the chance to be in nature, you get really up close and personal with nature. You definitely get up close and personal with nature when you're on your bike, but you're also in the activity of maintaining your bike. If you're just walking, then you're walking and you're really much more up close and personal with the nature that you're interacting with. Hiking builds up your glutes, your quads, your hamstrings, your core, your hip muscles, and it helps with bone density because it's more weight bearing than cycling. So it's really a good counterpoint to cycling. So, you know, you can find a local hiking club. We're very fortunate here in this area because, I mean, if you're a Thread City cycler, or if you just live in this area, Mansfield is just so rich with trails and places to go hiking. The Friends of Mansfield Hollow has hikes that happen at Mansfield Hollow, of course, and there are nice hiking trails in Mansfield Hollow, whether it's an organized hike or not. We've got the Nipmuc Trail here, and you can go there and you can hike, you know, those places where you see the blue dot trail or it says Nipmuc Trail there. Just follow the blue dots and you can do at and backs and you can do loops. And there's so many places you can go. You can get into the Nipmuc Trail across from the Southeast School on Route 89 here in Mansfield. There's Cooney Rock, which is a place you can access off of Chaffeyville Road. And there's 50 Foot, which you can access from the Historical Society in Mansfield and Stores. Great places to hike, just really nice. Lots of places you can go. And you can also hike on the rail trails if you want to. We've got the Hop River Trail, which is accessible from many places, one of them being King's Road in Coventry, and many other places to get in down the line on the Hop River Trail. You can access the airline trail from numerous places, including from Mackey's in Columbia, and from the Trail Park in Willimantic, from the Connecticut Railroad Museum in Willimantic. You can access the airline trail south, and there's a park along the water there, along the Willimantic River, there's a paved section of the trail that will go to Mackey's. It's very lovely there. And of course, Mansfield Hollow has lots of trails. So it's a really fun place to go, and you get to look at a lake too. Very cool. So going hiking, it's great. For the winter time, if you can get to it, cross-country skiing is great cross training for cycling. Ron swears by it, and it really, it really uses a lot of the same muscles, and you may find you can do an, I don't know if you want to do this experiment, but I'll suggest it. If you have access to lots of cross-country skiing, we don't always get the best snow here, but it can be done around here. Ron has said to me that he found that there was a winter where he did cross-country skiing, especially when he did skate skiing, that when he got back on the bike, it was like he hadn't been off. Because you just use a lot of the same muscles, and you use a lot of, and it's really amazing cardio. You have to be careful with cross-country skiing, because I find that when I go cross-country skiing, you're definitely using some different muscles than you use on your bike, because I'm usually sore after the first time I cross-country ski. So if you're going to use that in the winter as a good cross-training, it's good to get into it slowly. But it's tremendous. There were years where Thread City Cyclers, we would go out and we would cross-country ski and snowshoe in the winter, and we'd have gatherings, and one of our favorite places to go is the Goodwin Forest. Goodwin Forest is great, has terrific trails there for cross-country skiing, very pretty. You have a lake. When the lake is frozen, you can actually ski or snowshoe on the lake. It's really cool over there. You can cross-country ski in Mansfield Hollow as well. When the snow is good there, you can certainly go there, and you can also go on the rail trails to cross-country ski at that time of year. It also works your upper body in a way that your lower, that's one of the reasons you get sore, because you're using your upper body in a way that you're not using it on the bike. So skate skiing, there are skis where when you do straight up cross country skiing, straight up cross country skiing, you're going back and forth. When you skate ski, you're going off to the side. So you're doing a diagonal off to the side in a skating motion when you're skate skiing. Very, very good for you. I don't know if I can do it. Then there's my favorite, strength training. So strength training is really, really good for you. It's a good counterpoint to cycling. It will make you stronger. Your core counts in terms of your strength training. Really important to do. And one of the things you can do is, especially in the off season, you can use bigger weights. I do a short routine all year long. And I do more resistance training in the winter when it's the off season, when I'm not on the road, I'll use bigger weights and I'll do a longer workout, two or three times a week. And then in season, I do a short workout with less weight, and that's mostly core. And I, like I told you, I do my core workout, but then I do some upper body as well. So it's strength training will make you stronger, faster, and fitter. And you'll just be able, once again, you'll be able to be in that position on your bike more easily. And again, we have some issues with bone density because we're on our bikes for a long time. We do a lot of sweating, and you can sweat out your minerals and you don't have as much resistance training. If you do more sprinting and short workouts where you do some sprinting and some hill climbing, you're going to have better bone density than if you do a lot of long rides. The long rides where you're in high cortisol for hours and hours and hours, that's where you're going to lose your bone density. So if you do resistance training regularly, you're going to be more likely to maintain your bone density. The other thing that's important about doing resistance training is that you're going to build muscle mass. So if God forbid you go down, and we don't want you to go down, if you do go down, you're going to have cushion. You're going to be padded. And so you're going to be less likely to hurt yourself, and you're going to be less likely to get a fracture. You may not be less likely to get road rash, but you will be less likely to get a fracture because you have some cushioning. And we would rather you be cushioned with muscle than fat. And so the other thing is that if you have, one of the things is you see a lot of cyclists who can ride long distances and really move a bike and are chubby. If you have more muscle mass, you'll have, just like everybody else, when you have more muscle mass, you tend to maintain a lower fat mass because you have more muscle. Muscle is highly metabolic tissue. It has a lot of cells in it, and muscles are made for moving. So there's a lot of coenzyme Q10. There's a lot of actin and myosin. There's a lot of metabolism that happens in a muscle. So muscles are highly metabolically active, so they're going to tend to burn fat for you. So having more muscle mass is a good thing. Of course, you know, a lot of cyclists say they don't want to overdo it. They don't want to be too bulky, which is why I tend to do my heavier weights and more intense activities in the winter when I'm replenishing my body after being on the bike for a long time during the on season. And then in the summertime when I'm doing my resistance training, I use lighter weights and I do a shorter workout. And I focus more on the core than I do on a lot of upper body stuff. I do still do some upper body stuff because I want to keep the upper body strong so I can hold myself up on the bicycle when I'm climbing the hill. That's important to do. You're going to be able to hold yourself up on your bicycle climbing if you climb out of the saddle better if you do resistance training. That's where your push-ups come in. That's where your tricep dips come in. That's where your shoulder presses. All of those things are going to help you to support yourself on your bicycle, especially when you're out of the saddle. Also, if you don't work your upper body and all you do is ride your bike, you're gonna be imbalanced. You're gonna have muscle imbalances, and if all you care about is being on your bike, you're not gonna be as balanced even on the bicycle because you need your whole body to be in a good position of function when you're sitting in the saddle. So it is important to get that resistance training on. So that's really important. So the next thing is running. So a lot of cyclists will say, I don't want to run. And I, Fran, have trouble with running. There's caveats with the running because most people don't have good biomechanics for running. So if you're going to run, you have to make a decision as to whether you have the good biomechanics for running. I now have a knee, so I don't know if I'm going to be training for the Manchester Road Race this year. But running is good cross-training because it's different than cycling. It's interesting. It helps you maintain aerobic fitness. And you can run. There's a longer season for running. Running and walking are things you can do in the off season. You can run comfortably when it's much colder. Well, I'll go out and run in 20 degrees, no problem. Bicycle, no thank you. Too cold. The bike doesn't work as well. I don't work as well. I don't want the wind in my face, but I will run because you get nice and warm if you do use the right gear. I kind of have a temperature limit for running too. Like when it gets much below 20, I don't know that I want to be out there. And when it's in the 20s, it depends on the weather too. You know, I might opt for the treadmill, but the other thing about running is it's a great way to cram in a workout when you don't have a lot of time. It also has that bone density help. issue that you're pounding on your bones. So it's going to help to improve your bone density. So you want to make sure you get good running shoes, that fit you, that support you, that are good for whatever your issues are with your arches. And again, you have to figure out if running is really good for you personally. And if it's not that great for you, you don't have to run far. You could run on trails. That's one of the things you can do around here. You can go out in the woods and run, and it's a lot easier on your joints. Okay, here's one of my favorite cross trainings, and that is swimming. Get in the pool. Now, I am a swimmer. I love to swim. I'm very fortunate. I grew up in New Jersey, and I think New Jersey is far enough south that you find that it gets hot enough that most people get in the water. When you're in New England, people are not as likely to know how to swim, I have found, because the weather is not as hot here for as long, so people don't feel compelled to get in the water. Once you get far enough south, you got to at least get in the water to cool off, because you just can't cool off otherwise. And so the further south you get, the more likely you see homes with swimming pools and, you know, places where you can go to the beach and places where you can, lakes, everybody gets in the water. So I was very fortunate that I learned to swim very early, and I was encouraged to go in the water. My parents enjoyed the water, so we belonged to a lake when I was a kid, and my parents got me swimming lessons. I can't remember if I was 10 or if I was a young teenager, but I had swimming lessons early, so I did not develop a fear of the water. My sister swam as well, and she competitively dove for our high school. So we are water bugs. We love the water. So, and there are a lot of cyclists who just don't learn to swim. They haven't learned to swim, and they're not good at it. I do recommend it just because it feels so good. Unlike running, which can be really hard on your body, if you have a biomechanical issue, it can be really hard on you. Swimming is the opposite. So remember how we talked about how stretching is really good for you because you're realigning all of those muscles? Well, swimming can be similar, because the neat thing about swimming is when you're on a stop bicycle, you're stuck in that cockpit. In yoga, we have a pose called chair pose. You're in chair pose for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, right? So you're not supposed to be in the same pose. You would never have a yoga class where you're in one pose the whole time, unless it was Shavasana and you were doing a meditation. Swimming, you stretch your whole body out. You're using all of the muscles in your body, and you're moving your whole body all the time with support. It's really great. And that's the best thing. You get a good workout, but you're supported the whole time. Whereas running, there's a lot of caveats to it. I think there's really no caveats to swim. Now, mind you, to certain strokes you're going to have a difficult time with if you have injuries. Like if you have a rotator cuff injury, it's going to be a problem. And injuries are going to apply to anything that we're talking about. But getting in the pool is just so good for you, because if you have an injury, you can usually get in the water. Even if you can't swim, if you don't know how to swim, you can do exercises in the water. And people who are injured, who are saying to me, well, I can't walk, I can't run, I try to ask them to get in the water and do some kind of exercises and get a workout that will help them. But learning to swim is so valuable. It is great cross training. It's, on my off days, I head for the pool. If I'm sore, I head for the pool. Sometimes I head for the pool just because I feel like it. It's very invigorating to be in the water. If you have sore muscles, getting in the water will help you to heal your muscles, because you've got hydrostatic pressure against those muscles. If you have PMS, it's really good to be in the pool, because again, the hydrostatic pressure is going to take care of your bloating and swelling. Swimming also helps you to build your core and lengthen your hip flexors, which get really scrunched. All the things that get really scrunched up on your bicycle are going to get stretched out when you get in the pool. Having access to the pool can be an issue, but we happen to be in Mansfield. We're so lucky. If you work for UConn, you have pools you can get into here. We have the Mansfield Community Center. There's Kramer Pool down in Windham. And then if you have access to a lake, of course, getting in the lake is a wonderful thing too. If you live in a town with a lake, of course, you can get into the lake. But any way you can do it, even if you don't know how to swim, just getting in the water and flailing around and stretching is really good. When I do my swim workouts at the end of my swim, I always stretch in the pool, and people sometimes they observe me stretching like, oh, I should really stretch too. And I'm thinking, yeah, you probably should. But I always find that stretching is the best part of the workout. If you don't know how to swim, you can get swimming lessons. And if you live up in Putnam, you can go to the Y. They'll teach you to swim there. You can get swimming lessons here in Mansfield at the Mansfield Community Center. Really worthwhile thing to do. We'll improve your cycling. And we'll make it so you don't get bored with your bike because you have something else that you can do. All right. So speaking of the importance of stretching, yoga and Pilates. Now, yoga and Pilates are not the same thing. And so yoga and Pilates are, yoga has a spiritual basis to it, and yoga has a lot of poses. Yoga is thousands of years old. Pilates was invented by Joe Pilates, this guy who created it as a rigorous system of stretching and strengthening, mostly for dancers, so dancers could, align themselves. But they're both helpful. It's up to you if you want a more spiritual sort of yoga, or if you want to go to a studio, or as I said, if you want to get videos in the privacy of your home. I find that doing, so for me, it's one of the things I see in the cycling community is people don't want to go to the yoga studio because they're embarrassed, because they feel like they're not flexible. And that's something you can choose to work through. You go to a beginner's class and just allow yourself to be a beginner and be okay with that. If you just can't do that, then that's when you either get your books, your diagrams, or get your YouTube or get a subscription to yoga online. But it is so valuable. I find it valuable to be in community. I tend to do more yoga classes in the winter because I don't spend the time outside on the bike, and I generally fit 1 to 2 yoga classes in a week all in the off season. And for this time of year, I tend to go less often because I want to be outdoors more, and I'll tend to do my stretching at home. But I find yoga so valuable. It helps with strength, flexibility, and endurance. And you would be surprised at the balance issues you might have. Now, you have good balance sitting on your bicycle, but I find that the balance poses for yoga are my most challenging. The strength poses I'm pretty good at. The flexibility poses, for the most part, I used to be better at the flexibility poses before I became an avid cyclist. And once again, I have to emphasize that cycling is one of the worst sports for flexibility. It takes your you become less flexible when you ride a bike. So stretching becomes imperative. Doing yoga specifically, so why should you do yoga versus just stretching? Well, yoga, you're going to be guided through ancient poses, which were designed for specific types of healing for specific organ systems in the body. It's not just stretching. There's a spiritual component to all of the poses or asanas, and they were created with wisdom as to healing various parts of the body. Also, you're going to be guided through breath work. You're going to be breathing into your poses. So as you do that breathing, when you do systematic breathing, you reduce your stress. One of the things that you get on a bicycle, when you're in a bicycle for a long time, you're in high cortisol. So when your cortisol is high, that's your fight or flight hormone. That's running, that's the hormone that's putting fuel into your system so you can do what you need to do on your bicycle. When you are, when you're in high cortisol all the time, cortisol is catabolic. It breaks tissue down. You're also just in more of a stressed mode. So when you do yoga, you're doing a lot of breathing, and instead of breathing hard to get yourself up the hill, you're breathing systematically, and it lowers your cortisol. So you spend all this time in high cortisol when you're on the bike. Yoga does the opposite, because any good yoga instructor, teacher, master, whatever, will tell you, what is the most important thing in yoga? You're going to say strength, flexibility? No. The most important thing in yoga is the breath. The breath. You could stand, it doesn't matter the pose that you're in. You get in a pose to your ability. And that's the other thing. In a good yoga class, we get pretty competitive when we're on our bicycles. And people can get competitive in yoga class, but generally yoga classes are designed to not be that way. If a teacher sees you struggling to get into a more advanced version of a pose and you can't get there, a good teacher is going to come over and gently encourage you to stop that, to not do that and to get into a version of the pose that suits your body, whether that means you do an easier version of the pose or you're given a prop. And you should never be embarrassed or think less of yourself if you need to use a block or a strap or a blanket or a bolster in yoga. We have a wonderful yoga instructor locally, Bill, and Bill Goodale. And he's at he teaches in a few places. He teaches at the Mansfield Community Center. And he teaches at Samadhi in Manchester as well. But when you go to Bill's class, you're going to use blocks. And he doesn't sort of go, well, you can use a block if you want. No, he has everybody getting the blocks out and using them because Bill needs to use the blocks. So you get to use the blocks. And I had so much respect for that because I found that using the blocks made me freer to enjoy the pose and be in the pose with more ease. And you want to be in your pose in a way that you can do your breathing. If you're so stressed in your pose that you can't do your breathing, you're missing the point of the pose. But yoga itself will put you into stretching, strength, will help you with your flexibility, and it will also help you with your balance if you do balance poses. I find that balance poses are very, as much as I can balance myself on a bicycle, to balance myself in tree pose or in split or warrior three is really hard. And those are things I need to work on. And you might find that you have some muscle imbalances because of spending so much time on the bike that you can rescue by doing yoga. And doing that breathing is going to help you to reduce your stress. All right. So this has been a really great bicycle talk for me today. This is really fun talking to you about it. So we talked to you about doing more stretching, how great the steeplechase was. Don't forget to change your cables and try a different sport. And that's really great. And there's one sport that they didn't put on here that I want to throw out as number 8, and that's dancing. So whether you do social dancing or you find a form of dance that you like, not everybody likes to dance, but if you're a person that likes to dance, you can check out Zumba, you can do social dancing. I used to teach a body mind fitness art called Nia, which you can still do at Yoga Sana, which is in Dayville. That's still available there, and there are a few places you can do NIA. It stands for Neuromuscular Integrative Action, and it is a wonderful healing form of dance that combines yoga, martial arts, ballet, jazz, and breathing and spiritual practice, or as much spirituality as you want to put into it. But it's tremendous. It's like moving yoga. It's really incredible. But any kind of dance is another thing that you can do, whether it's just you putting on some music and bopping around your kitchen or your living room, or whether it's going to Zumba or taking a dance class. Dance will help your cycling, again, because it will help your flexibility and strength. All right. So it's been really great hanging out with you on Bicycle Talk today, and I'll have to admit to Ron that I didn't do his pre-recorded show, that I decided to commandeer Bicycle Talk again. But I am going to sign off now and say that you have been listening to Bicycle Talk. I'm Pedlin Fran, or the radio naturopath, here on Bicycle Talk. And this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. That's bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or radionaturopath@gmail.com. That's radionaturopath@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Fran, the radio naturopath. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores.